I say. I stand up and walk my cup to the sink. I didn't even know she asked you for tuition money. She didn't know about the scholarship either. But I can guarantee whatever you sent her for tuition was never meant for me to begin with. I pour my coffee into the sink and rinse the cup out. When I turn around and face him, he looks dejected, confused. His mouth opens like he's about to say something, but then he closes it and shakes his head. I'm sure it's a lot to process for him. We don't talk about my mother. This is probably the first time I've ever spoken negatively about her to him. And while I would love to tell him just how much of a mother she never was, it's 6:30 in the morning and I can't have this conversation right now. I'm going back to bed, I say, heading toward the stairs.
Bea, wait.
I pause on the second step and slowly turn to face him. He's standing with his hands on his hips, looking at me intently.
I'm proud of you.
I nod, but as soon as I turn around and walk back up the stairs, I feel the ball of anger tightening inside of me. I don't want him to be proud of me. It's precisely why I didn't tell him. And even though it seems like he's trying to make an effort with me now, I can't help but feel full of resentment that I went most of my life without him in it. I will not allow his words to make me feel good, nor will I allow them to excuse his second-rate parenting. Of course you're proud of me, Brian, but you should only be proud of me because I miraculously survived childhood all on my own. Chapter 14. I couldn't go back to sleep after Samson left this morning, no matter how hard I tried. Maybe it was the conversation with my father that made sleep difficult. Sarah set up loungers and an umbrella on the beach after lunch, and I must have finally fallen asleep in my lounger at some point because I just woke up. There's drool on my arm. I'm on my stomach, facing away from Sarah's lounge chair when I open my eyes. I wipe my arm and push myself up enough so that I can roll over onto my back. When I get situated, I look over at Sarah, but it's not Sarah I'm looking at. It's Samson. He's asleep in her lounge chair. I sit up and look out at the water. Sarah and Marcos are on paddleboards a good ways out in the ocean. I grab my phone and look at the time. It's 4 o'clock. I slept for an hour and a half. I lie back down and glance over at Samson while he sleeps. He's on his stomach, his head resting on his arms. He's got a ball cap on turned backward and he's wearing a pair of sunglasses. No shirt, but that's not a bad thing. I roll onto my side and rest my head on my arm and I stare at him for a while. I know very little about the pieces that make him up as a whole, but I feel like I know what kind of person all those pieces have made him. Maybe you don't have to know a person's history to realize who they are in the present. And who I've started to realize he is on the inside makes him even more attractive on the outside. Attractive enough that I think about him almost every waking second. I find myself focusing my attention on his mouth. I don't know why I freaked out while he was kissing me last night. Maybe because I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that this past week has been real. It's a lot at once, and it seemed to all culminate and scream at me during our kiss last night. It makes me wonder if he kissed me again tonight, would I react the same way? Or would I allow myself to actually see it through and enjoy the entire kiss like I enjoyed the first few seconds of it? I stare at his lips, convincing myself that it's worth a second try. And a third, and maybe a fourth. Maybe if I kiss him enough, it'll eventually only feel perfect.
You realize my eyes are open, right?
Shit, I thought he was asleep. I cover my face with my hand. There's no hiding my embarrassment.
Don't worry, he says, his voice hoarse like it's scratching its way up his throat. I've been staring at you the whole time you've been sleeping.
He reaches out and touches my elbow with his finger.
How do you get this scar?
I turn onto my side and face him again. During a volleyball game.
His lounge chair is only about a foot from mine, but it seems like a mile away when he stops touching my arm.
How good was your team?
We won our state championship twice, I say. Did you play any sports in high school?
No, I didn't go to a typical school.
What kind of school did you go to? Samson shakes his head, indicating he's not going to answer that. I roll my eyes. Why do you do that? Why do you ask me questions and then I ask you the same thing and you refuse to answer?
I've told you more than I've told anyone, ever, he says. Don't be greedy.
Then stop asking me questions you aren't willing to answer yourself. He grins.
Stop answering my questions.
You think me knowing where you went to high school is somehow more personal than you having your tongue in my mouth? Or me telling you about Dakota? Or you telling me about your mother? I pull my arms up behind my head and close my eyes. Your logic is quite stupid, Samson. There's really no point in trying to have a conversation with him if all he's going to do is dance around every topic like he's some kind of ballerina.
I went to boarding school in New York, he finally says, and I hated every second of it.
I smile, feeling like I won this battle somehow, but inside I'm kind of saddened by that answer. Boarding school doesn't sound fun. No wonder he didn't want to talk about it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I swivel my head and look at him. He's removed his sunglasses and the reflection of the sun makes his eyes look almost clear. It doesn't seem like someone with eyes as transparent as his could be as closed off as he is. We stare at each other, much like we always do, but it's different this time. Now we know what each other tastes like. He knows my darkest secret. Yet he's still looking at me like I'm the most interesting thing on this peninsula. He drops his gaze and looks down between our chairs. He drags a finger in the sand.
How do you spell your name?
B-E-Y-A-H. I watch as he writes my name in the sand. When he finishes, he drags a finger across it and strikes it out, then wipes his whole hand across it until my name disappears. I don't know how I could possibly feel that beneath my skin, but I do. Samson glances toward the water.
Sarah and Marcos are coming back.
He puts his shades on and then hops up. I keep my hands behind my head, pretending to be relaxed, despite feeling like I've just been electrocuted. Samson walks to Sarah, who is struggling with her board. He takes over and drags it the rest of the way out of the water for her. Sarah pulls at her ponytail when she reaches me and takes a seat on the lounge chair Samson was just lying on. She squeezes water out of her hair. You have a good nap? Sarah asks.
Yeah, I can't believe I fell asleep.
You snore, she says, laughing.
Did you ask Samson if he wants a double date tonight?
No, it didn't come up. Marcos and Samson are walking the paddle boards toward us.
Samson, we're all going on a double date, Sarah says to him. Be ready at 6.
Samson doesn't miss a beat in his response.
Who's my date?
Bea, idiot.
Samson looks at me like he's considering it.
Is this like a friend date?
It's food, Marcos says. Don't let Sarah put a label on it.
We doing seafood? Samson asks him.
Would you even allow us to eat anything else?
Samson looks back at me.
You like shrimp, Bea?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever had it. Samson tilts his head.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic.
I'm from Kentucky. We don't have a lot of affordable seafood restaurants.
You've never even been to a Red Lobster?
Marcos asks me. Y'all forget things like Red Lobster are fancy to a lot of people.
I'll order for you then, Samson says.
How very chauvinistic of you, I tease. Sarah pulls on her bathing suit cover up and stands.
Come on, let's go get ready.
Now we aren't leaving for another 2 hours.
Yeah, but we have a lot to do to get you ready.
Like what?
I'm giving you a makeover.
I shake my head. No, please, no. She nods. Yes, I'm doing your hair, your nails, your makeup. She grabs my hand and pulls me out of the lounger. She points at all the stuff we brought to the beach earlier. You two strapping men take care of this, will ya? We get halfway to the house and she says, "He's into you, I can tell. He doesn't look at girls like he looks at you." I don't respond to her because I get a text in the middle of her comment. I rarely get texts. Not many people have my phone number. I look at my phone as Sarah starts walking up the stairs. The text is from Samson. "Look at us going on a spontaneous date. Maybe we are fun." "You coming?" Sarah asks. I wipe the grin off my face and follow her inside. Chapter 15. They're all staring at me, waiting for me to take a bite. Even our waiter. Talk about pressure.
"Dip it in cocktail sauce first," Marco suggests.
Samson pushes the cocktail sauce away from me. "Are you crazy? That'll make her puke." He pushes tartar sauce toward me. "Here, use this." Sarah rolls her eyes as she stacks up three of the menus. She and Marcos just ordered, but Samson and I haven't yet, because he wanted to make sure I liked shrimp first. The waiter was amused I'd never had shrimp, so he brought me a piece to try, and now he's sticking around to watch my reaction. It's grilled shrimp without a shell or a tail. I'm not a huge fan of fish, so I'm not expecting much, but the pressure is real as I dip it into the tartar sauce.
"Y'all are acting like her reaction is gonna be life or death," Sarah says. "I'm getting hungry."
"It'll only be life or death if she's allergic to shellfish," the waiter says.
I pause before taking the bite. "What exactly falls under the definition of shellfish?" Samson says,
"Lobster, shrimp, things in shells." "Crab, crawfish, turtles," Marco says.
"Turtles aren't a fish," Sarah says, rolling her eyes.
"It was a joke," Marco says. "Have you ever had lobster or crab?"
Samson asks me. "I've had crab."
"You should be fine then."
"For Pete's sake, just eat it before I do," Sarah says. "I'm starving."
I bite down on the shrimp, only eating half of it. Everyone is watching me chew, even Sarah. It's got a decent flavor. It's not the greatest thing I've ever had, but it's good. "Not bad." I pop the rest of it in my mouth. Samson smiles and hands the menu to the waiter.
"We'll both have the shrimp platter."
The waiter writes it down and walks away. Sarah scrunches her nose up.
"He really did just order for you. I can't tell if that's cute or disgusting."
"I tried ordering for you once and you elbowed me in the side," Marco says.
Sarah nods. "Yeah, you're right, it's disgusting." She takes a sip of her drink.
"I feel like doing something touristy this weekend."
"Like what?" Marcos asks.
"The water park? Or a duck tour?" She looks at me and Samson. "You two wanna come?"
"I'm free after lunch every day, except Friday. I'm finishing Marjorie's roof."
Well, that kind of melts my heart a little.
"Sean?"
All four of us look in the direction of the voice. A guy is approaching our table, looking at Samson. The guy is tall and skinny with arms covered in tattoos. I'm staring at one on his forearm of a lighthouse when I feel Samson stiffen.
"Holy shit," the guy says, "it is you. How are you, man?"
"Hey," Samson says. He doesn't sound very excited to see this guy. Also, why did the guy call him Sean? Samson taps my leg, wanting out of the booth. I stand up to let him out and he gives the guy a hug. I take my seat and the three of us aren't even hiding the fact that we're eavesdropping on their conversation.
"Dude," the guy says to Samson, "when did you get out?"
"Get out?" Samson looks over at our table. There's a discomfort to him now. He puts his hand on the guy's back and walks him away from the table so we can't hear what they're saying. I look at Sarah and Marcos to see what their reactions are. Marcos is taking a drink, but Sarah's head is tilted in curiosity as she stares at Samson. She falls back against the booth and says,
"That was weird. Why did that guy call him Sean?"
Marcos shrugs. Maybe Samson is his middle name, I say, more to myself than to Sarah or Marcos. I wonder why I didn't demand he tell me his full name last night when I asked. This is weird, knowing I don't even know the guy's first name. But I guess he doesn't know that my last name is Grimm. Or maybe he does, since I have the same last name as my father.
Why did that guy ask him when he got out? Sarah says. Got out of where? Jail? Prison?
Marco shrugs again. Could have been referring to rehab.
He was in rehab? Sarah asks.
I have no idea. I've known the guy as long as you have, he says. Samson reappears at our table moments later, San's friend. I stand up and he slides back into the booth. He says nothing, offers no explanation. That doesn't matter because Sarah won't let this slide. I can tell by the way she's staring at him.
Why did that guy call you Sean?
Samson stares at her a moment, then releases a quiet laugh.
What?
She waves her hand toward the direction the guy went.
He called you Sean. And then he asked you when you got out. Where have you been, jail?
For some reason, Samson looks at me. I say nothing because I'm waiting for the same answers Sarah is waiting for. He looks back at Sarah and says,
That's my name, Sean Samson.
He waves a hand at Marcos.
He called me Samson when we met, and it just stuck with you guys. Everyone else calls me Sean.
Marcos brings his straw to his mouth. Sounds vaguely familiar now that I think about it.
Sean? His name is Sean?
I'm so used to calling him Samson, I'm not sure I can call him Sean.
Okay, Sarah says, but where'd you get out of? Jail? Were you in jail?
Samson sighs, and I can tell he doesn't want to talk about it. Leave him alone, Marco says, also recognizing Samson's discomfort. Sarah waves a defensive hand toward me.
I'm trying to set my stepsister up with him. I think we deserve to know if he's some kind of criminal.
It's fine, Samson says. He was talking about getting out of this city. We went to boarding school together, and he knew how much I hated New York.
I can see the slow roll of his throat after he says that, as if he's swallowing a lie. What are the chances he'd run into a guy from New York on a peninsula in Texas? Very slim, but is it really Sarah's business? Is it mine? None of us owe each other our past. I don't know why I feel protective of him right now, but I know he hates talking about himself. Maybe that's something Sarah doesn't know about him. I'll get the truth out of him later. But right now, I just want the awkwardness to disappear, so I say, I've never been to New York. Texas is only the third state I've ever been to.
Seriously? Sarah says.
I nod. Yep. Only ever left Kentucky when I'd fly to Washington to see my father. I had no idea Texas was this hot. I'm not sure I like it. Marcos laughs. The waiter shows up with the appetizers Sarah ordered. He takes my glass to get me a refill, and Samson reaches for a piece of calamari, popping it in his mouth.
You ever tasted calamari, Bea?
I take a piece from him. Nope. Marcos rolls his head.
It's like you were raised on a different planet.
Sarah doesn't wait for me to start eating this time. She makes herself a plate of appetizers and begins eating. This small moment may not seem like a big deal to anyone at the table, but I'm relieved to know Sarah isn't putting as much pressure on herself as she was the night I showed up. Sarah starts asking me questions about what else I've never tried, and the conversation moves from being only about Samson to being unrelated to Samson. After a few minutes, Samson reaches under the table and grabs my hand. He gives it a squeeze before releasing it. When I look at him, he's saying a silent thank you. I barely know the guy, but I can somehow communicate better with him by not using words than I've ever been able to communicate verbally with anyone else. He gives me one look, and it's proof that I don't need to know more. Not right now, anyway. I'll peel his layers back on his time. Chapter 16. There weren't two seats next to each other when we made it to our nightly bonfire, so Samson is sitting across from me. Sadly, Beau is in the one next to me. I've noticed Samson eyeing Beau every time he speaks to me. I'm trying to make it very clear that I'm not interested, but Beau isn't taking the hint. Guys like him never do. They're used to getting what they want, so they can't recognize when what they want doesn't want them. It's an unfathomable thought to Beau, I'm sure. "Oh, God," Sarah mutters. I glance at her, and she points a hand at the dune crossing about 50 feet from our sight. Cadence is walking over the dune. "I thought she left," I say. "I thought so too," Sarah says. I watch with a knot in my stomach as Cadence approaches us. Samson's back is to her, so he doesn't know she's walking up. When she reaches him, she wraps her hands around Samson's head and covers his eyes. He pulls her hands away and leans his head back, looking up at her. Before he can even react, she says, "Surprise!" Then she leans down and kisses him on the mouth. "We came back for another week." The blood in my body feels like it just turned to lava. Samson's eyes immediately find mine when she pulls away. I'm not displaying the jealousy on my face, but it sure is running through my body. Samson stands up and turns to Cadence. I can't hear what he says to her, but he glances at me for a split second before he puts his hand on Cadence's lower back and points at the water. They start walking in that direction, and all I can do is look down at my lap. I hope he's walking away from all of us so he can let her down gently. Or ungently, I don't care. Not that he owes me anything. I'm the one who stopped the kiss last night. "You okay?" Sarah asks, noticing the change in my demeanor. I blow out a steady breath. "What are they doing?" "Who, Cadence and Samson?" I nod. "Walking," she says. She narrows her eyes at me in suspicion. "What's up with the two of you?" I shake my head. Nothing is up. Sarah leans back in her chair. "I know you're private about a lot of things, Bea. I can deal with that. But if Samson kisses you this summer, will you please just give me a sign? You don't even have to say it out loud. Just high five me or something." I assure her with a nod, then glance over at Samson and Cadence. They're standing at least 2 feet apart. Her arms are folded tightly over her chest. She looks angry. I train my gaze back on the fire, but a few seconds later, there's a collective gasp. "Holy shit," Marco says, laughing. I look at him, but he's looking at Samson, who is now walking back to the fire. He's alone, rubbing his cheek. "She slapped him," Sarah whispers. When Samson reaches his seat, she says, "What did you say to her?"
"Nothing she wanted to hear." "Did you just turn her down?" Beau asks. "Why the fuck would you do that? She's hot."
Samson looks at Beau with a deadpan expression. He waves in the direction Cadence just stomped away in.
"She's fair game, Beau. Shoot your shot."
Beau shakes his head.
"Nah, I'm only interested in this shot right here,"
he says, indicating a hand toward me. "Not gonna happen, Beau," I say. Beau grins at me, and I have no idea how my flat-out refusal of him makes him think I mean anything other than the words I'm speaking to him. He stands up and grabs my hand. He tries to pull me up, but I don't budge.
"Come swimming with me," he says.
I shake my head. "I've told you no twice already." He tries to pick me up, but I kick him in the knee just as Samson jumps out of his seat and stalks over to us. He stands between us, facing Beau.
"She said no."
Beau looks at Samson and then around him at me. He flicks a finger between us.
"Oh, I get it. You two are a thing now." "It has nothing to do with me," Samson says. "I've listened to her ask you to leave her alone several times. Take a fucking hint."
Samson is angry. I don't know if it's stemming from jealousy or the simple fact that Beau is an asshole. I expect that to be the end of it, but Beau apparently doesn't like being yelled at. He swings at Samson, hitting him in the face. Then Beau puts up both fists like he's ready for a fight, but Samson brings a hand up to his jaw and stares hard at Beau.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, I'm fucking serious,
Beau responds, still in his fighting stance. Marcos is standing now, ready to defend Samson, but Samson doesn't look like he cares to entertain Beau.
Go home, Beau, Marcos says, stepping between Beau and Samson. Beau looks at Marcos.
How do you say asshole in Mexican?
The only thing I hate more than a douche is a racist douche. It's Spanish, not Mexican, I say, and I think Beau is the correct translation for asshole. Samson lets out a small laugh when I say that. It pisses Beau off.
Fuck you, you little rich prick. All of you can go to hell.
Beau's face is red with rage.
We're in hell every time you show up, Sarah says flatly.
Beau points at Sarah.
Fuck you,
he points at me.
And fuck you.
I guess that's where Samson draws the line. He doesn't hit Beau, but he moves toward him fast enough to make Beau jump back. Then Beau spins around and grabs his stuff from his chair and leaves. It's a beautiful sight. Samson falls into the chair, gripping his jaw. I've been slapped by a girl and punched by two guys since you showed up. Then stop taking my side. Samson looks at me with a small grin, almost as if he's saying, that's not gonna happen. You're bleeding. I grab a nearby towel and wipe his jaw. He's got a small gash across his jawbone. Beau must have been wearing a ring. You should put a bandage on that. Samson's eyes change as he stares back at me. I have some at the house. He pushes out of his chair and walks around the fire, heading home. He doesn't even invite me or wait on me, but I could tell from his expression he wants me to follow him. I press a palm against my neck, feeling the heat rising to my skin. I stand up. I glance at Sarah before I walk away.
Remember, she whispers, a signal, a high five.
I laugh and then follow Samson to his house. He's several yards ahead of me, but he leaves his door open when he goes inside, so he knows I'm following him. When I reach the top of the stairs, I blow out a calming breath. I don't know why I'm nervous. We kissed last night. The hardest part is over. I close the door when I walk inside. Samson is at the sink wetting a paper towel. I walk into the kitchen and notice he didn't turn any of the lights on. The only lights in the house are coming from the appliances and the moon shining through the windows. I lean against the counter to get a look at his cut. He tilts his head so that I can inspect it.
Is it still bleeding?
He asks. A little. I pull back and watch him as he presses the wet napkin against his jaw again.
I don't have any bandages, he says. I was lying.
I nod. I know. You don't have shit in this house. His mouth twitches like he wants to smile, but there's something heavy weighing his smile down. Whatever that heaviness is weighs me down. He pulls the napkin away and tosses it on the counter. Then he grips the edges of the counter like he's having to hold himself back. He's not going to make the first move this time, no matter how much he seems like he wants to. And as nervous as I am, I want to experience a whole kiss with him from beginning to end. Samson's stare is like a magnetic pull, coaxing me toward him. I step closer, my movements timid. No matter how nervous I seem, he doesn't push it. He just waits. My heart is pounding in my chest when it's clear to both of us that I'm about to kiss him. It feels different than last night. It feels more significant since we've both spent the last day thinking about it and have obviously come to the conclusion that we both want it to happen again. We maintain eye contact as I lift onto my toes and lightly press my lips to his. He inhales while my mouth is still against his. as if he's summoning up patience that no longer exists inside of him. I pull back a fraction, needing to see his reaction. His pointed gaze and parted lips are a promising hint for whatever might happen next. I don't feel like I'll end up running out of this kitchen again, now that I've spent the last 24 hours regretting that move. Samson lowers his forehead to mine. I squeeze my eyes shut when he wraps a hand around the back of my head. He keeps his forehead pressed against mine, and I imagine his eyes are closed too. It's like he wants to be close to me, but he knows he can't hug me, and he doesn't know if he should kiss me. I tilt my head back on instinct, wanting his lips against mine again. He accepts the silent invitation by kissing the corner of my mouth, then the center of it. He releases a shaky breath, like he's savoring what's coming. His hand that's wrapped in my hair angles my head back even more, and then he kisses me with confidence. It's slow and deep, like he might not survive if he doesn't swallow a little bit of my soul in this kiss. He tastes like salt water, and my blood feels like the sea raging and crashing through my veins. I want to live in this feeling, sleep in it, wake up in it. I don't want the kiss to end yet, but when he starts to slow it down, I like how he does it. Gradual, careful, difficult, like he's coming to a halt about as slow as a train could. When we're no longer kissing, he releases me, but I don't move away. I'm still pressed against him, but he's gripping the counter again on either side of himself, rather than gripping me. I appreciate that he isn't wrapping me up in his arms right now. Kissing, I've proved I can handle tonight. Being held is something I'm not quite ready for, and he already knows how I feel about it. I press my forehead against his shoulder and close my eyes. I can hear his breaths, labored and deep, as he rests his head lightly against mine. We stay like this for a while, and I don't know what to feel or what to think. I don't know if it's normal to feel 1,000 pounds heavier after you kiss someone. I feel like I'm doing this all wrong, but at the same time, it feels like maybe Samson and I are the only people who are doing this right in the whole world. "Bea," he whispers. His mouth is right over my ear, so when he says my name, goosebumps run down my neck and arms. I keep my forehead pressed against him and my eyes closed. "What?" There's a pause that feels way longer than it actually is.
"I'm leaving in August."
I don't know what to say to that. It was only 4 words, but he drew a very deep line in the sand with those 4 words. A line I knew would eventually come. "Me too," I say. I lift my head and my eyes are drawn to his necklace. I touch it, running my finger across the wood. He's looking down at me like maybe he wants to kiss me again. I would take 1,000 more of those tonight. I didn't feel anything negative this time. It was all good, yet chilling. It's as if he kissed me backward from the inside out, the same way I think he looks at me sometimes. Like he sees the inside of me before he notices what's outside. He tilts my chin up with a finger and presses his lips to mine again, this time with his eyes open, soaking me in. He pulls back, but not very far. All his words seem to seep into my mouth when he speaks.
"If we do this, it stays in the shallow end."
I nod, but then I shake my head. I don't know if I'm agreeing or disagreeing. "What do you mean by shallow end?" His stare matches the tightness in my chest. He slides his tongue over his top lip like he's thinking of how to elaborate on his thoughts without hurting my feelings.
"I just mean, if this becomes a thing, a summer thing, that's all I want it to be. I don't want to leave here in August in a relationship."
"I don't want that either. We'll be on 2 different sides of the country." He slides the backs of his fingers down my arm.
When he slides them back up again, he doesn't stop at my shoulder. His fingers glide up my collarbone until he's touching my cheek.
People sometimes still drown in the shallow end, he whispers.
That's a dark thought, one I think he probably meant to keep to himself. But here I am, pulling back those layers, whether he likes it or not. So many layers. I don't know how kissing him felt like I bypassed every layer and burrowed right into his core, but it did. It's like I see the real him despite all the unknown that still surrounds him. Who was that guy at dinner? I ask. He swallows hard, glancing away, and it makes me want to run a soothing hand down his throat.
I don't want to lie to you, Bea, but I also can't be honest with you.
I have no idea what that means, but the thing about Samson is, he doesn't seem to be the type to want attention or manufacture drama. So by saying something like this, it makes me think it's even worse than how he's presenting it. What's the worst thing you've ever done? I ask him. He brings his eyes back to mine with another predictable shake of his head.
It's that bad? It's bad. Worse than what I did with Dakota?
Samson presses his lips into a thin, irritated line, and then dips his head, looking at me with intensity.
There are two different kinds of wrong, the wrong that stems from weakness and the wrong that stems from strength. You made that choice because you were strong and needed to survive. You didn't make that choice because you were weak.
I grasp onto every word of that because I want to make it my truth. Will you just answer one question for me? I ask. He doesn't say yes, but he doesn't say no. He just waits for my question. Was it an assault of any kind?
No, nothing like that.
I'm relieved by that, he can tell. He brushes my hair over my shoulders with both hands and then presses his mouth against my forehead. He kisses me there, then leans his head against mine.
I'll tell you the day before you leave for college.
If you're eventually going to tell me, why can't you just tell me right now?
Because I want to spend the rest of the summer with you. And if I tell you, I don't think you'll want that.
I'm not sure what he could possibly tell me that would make me not want to speak to him. But I know if I dwell on it, I'm just going to stress over it. I'll wait. At the rate our conversations have been going, I'll get it out of him before August. But for now, I just nod. Because it's nothing he wants to tell me tonight. And if there's one thing I can do right now, it's show him the same patience he showed me last night. He kisses me again. It's a quick kiss, a goodnight kiss. I don't say anything as I pull away from him and walk toward the door, because all my words feel too big for my voice. It's hard just walking out his door right now. I can't imagine what August 3rd will feel like. PJ is waiting outside the door when I close it. He follows me loyally down the stairs into the house. When I reach the top of the stairs to the house, he walks to his dog bed and lies down. Thankfully, no one is in the living room when I enter the house. I lock the door and sneak up the stairs. Before I open my door, I glance at Sarah's bedroom door. I think I want to tell her we kissed. It's a weird feeling wanting to open up to another girl. I never even told Natalie about the thing between Dakota and me. I was too ashamed to tell her. I knock softly on Sarah's door, not wanting to wake up anyone else in the house. Sarah doesn't say anything. She's probably still at the beach. I push her door open to check and see if she's in her bed, but as soon as I peek my head inside, I pull the door shut. Marcos was on top of her. He was clothed, but still, I wasn't expecting that. I walk to my room, but then remember what Sarah said at the beach about just giving her a silent sign. I walk back into her room. She and Marcos stop kissing and look at me. I reach the bed and hold up a hand to get a high five from her. She laughs and high fives me.
Hell yes,
she whispers as I leave her room. Chapter 17. The last few days have been the least stressful days of my life. It's like spending time with Samson releases some kind of hormone from my brain that's been missing for 19 years. I feel happier. I don't feel like I'm on the verge of breaking all the time. I'm sure it's more than just Samson. It's a combination of all the things I've never had before. Decent shelter that isn't rotting from the inside by termites. 3 meals a day, a constant friend who lives right across the hall, the ocean, the sunrise. It's almost too much good happening at once. I'm overdosing on good things, which only means I'll eventually have to go through the withdrawal when summer ends. But like Sarah said, summers are for focusing on today and today only. I'll worry about the painful part of summer on August 3rd. Samson decided a ladder would be safer and easier to reach my balcony in the mornings than jumping proved to be. I'm sitting in my usual seat on my balcony, eating grapes I just took from the refrigerator, when I hear him raising the ladder. My favorite part of our morning routine is when he reaches the top of the ladder and smiles at me. Although last night might have been better than our mornings together. He talked me into getting back in the ocean, and we kissed without that kiss being interrupted by a searing pain. Kiss is putting it mildly. We made out. As much as a person can make out in the ocean without putting hands inside bathing suits and swim trunks. But that's the only physical time we've really gotten outside of mornings these last few days. I'm kind of uncomfortable with public displays of affection in front of other people, and we're always with Sarah and Marcos. Samson reaches the top of the ladder and we both smile at each other.
Morning.
Hey, I pop another grape into my mouth. After he climbs over the railing, he bends down and gives me a quick kiss, then sits next to me. I take a grape out of the bag and bring it to his lips. He barely parts them with a grin, forcing me to shove my finger into his mouth as he takes the grape. He circles his lips around my finger for a second, then pulls away slowly. He starts to chew the grape.
Thank you.
Now I want to feed him grapes all day. He wraps an arm over the back of the chair, and I lean against him, but not close enough that he would take it as a sign to pull me to him. We watch the sunrise in silence, and I think about the turn my life has taken since I arrived. I thought I knew who I was, but I had no idea people can become different versions of themselves in different settings. In this setting, where everything feels good and perfect, I'm actually at peace with my life. I don't fall asleep bitter every night. I don't even actively hate my father like I used to. And I'm not so much a disbeliever in love anymore. I'm not a skeptic here, because I'm able to look at life through a different lens. It makes me wonder what version of myself I'll be when I get to college. Will I be happy there? Will I miss Samson? Will I continue to thrive, or will I wilt back into my old self? I feel like a flower being taken out of the shadows and put into the sun. I'm blooming for the first time since I broke through the earth's soil.
What are today's plans? Samson asks.
I shrug. I think it's clear by now that I have absolutely no plans until August 3rd.
Good. Want to rent a golf cart and take a tour of the beach this afternoon? I know a really secluded spot.
Sure. Sounds fun. Especially since he said the word secluded. That sounds like an invite to finally be able to spend some alone time with him. The sun is up now, and this is usually when Samson leaves so I can go back to sleep. But instead of standing up, he slides me onto his lap so that I'm straddling him. He leans his head back against the chair, resting his hands on my hips.
We should start watching the sunrise in this position.
It would block your view, I say. He brings a hand up to my face, and his fingertips against my jaw feel like tiny little fires against my skin.
You're prettier than the view, Bea.
He slips his hand behind my head and brings me to his mouth. Both of his arms wrap around me and he pulls me closer, but I shift a little so that he'll be reminded not to do that. I don't like it when both of his arms go around me while we kiss,
Because it makes me think of being held, and being held is something more personal to me than kissing, or even sex. I like kissing Samson. I like spending time with him. But I don't like the idea of sharing something so intimate with someone who doesn't want to share more than a few weeks of themselves with me. His hands fall to my hips like I've trained them to do over the last few days. He kisses my jaw, then the side of my head. I have to go, he says. I have a lot to do today. Every day, he's always doing something different, helping someone repair a roof, rebuilding a dune. Most of it seems like busy work. I don't know that he actually takes money for the work he does. I slide off him and watch as he heads back toward the ladder. He doesn't make eye contact with me as he descends the ladder and disappears. I lean my head against the back of the chair and pop a grape into my mouth. I'm sure he wants more than I'm giving him physically, but I can't give him more if he insists on staying in the shallow end. Hugs and being held might seem like shallow end stuff to him, but to me, those things are buried somewhere in the Mariana Trench. I'd rather have casual sex with him than let him hug me. That's probably proof that I have some deep shit that needs unpacking by a therapist, but whatever. Ocean therapy has worked wonders for me so far, and it's free. Secluded was an understatement. He brought us so far down the beach, the houses aren't clustered in neighborhoods anymore. They're sparse and scattered. There are no people, just the dunes behind us and the ocean in front of us. If I were going to choose a place to build a house, this would be it. Why aren't there very many houses here? Does the land flood too easily?
There used to be a lot of houses here. Hurricane Ike leveled everything.
Samson takes a drink of water. He brought sandwiches, water, and a blanket. He's considering this our first official date, since hanging out with Sarah and Marcos doesn't really count. He even pulled up to my stairs earlier in the golf cart to pick me up. Do you think it'll ever be the same as before the hurricane? He shrugs.
Maybe not like it was before. The whole peninsula became gentrified in the rebuild, but it's thriving more than I thought it would. It's still a work in progress, though. It'll take more than just a few years to come close to what it was like before.
He points to a spot behind us.
That's where I found Rake's boat. There are probably still pieces of it buried behind the dune. They haven't done much work in this area since the hurricane.
I feed a piece of my bread to PJ. He rode in the back of the golf cart all the way here.
You think this dog belonged to one of the people whose houses were destroyed? I think you're the only person that dog has ever belonged to.
I smile when he says that, even though I know I'm not the first person PJ has ever loved. He knows commands, so someone spent time training him in the past. I've always wanted a dog, but I never had enough food to feed one. I'd taken strays, but they eventually left me for other families who fed them more often.
What are you going to do with him in August?
Samson asks, leaning across me to scratch PJ on the head.
I don't know. I'm trying not to think about it.
Samson's eyes meet mine in that moment, and there's a flash of contemplation that passes between us.
What will I do with the dog? What will we do about us? What's goodbye going to feel like?
Samson stretches out in the sand. I'm sitting cross-legged, so he lays his head in my lap and stares up at me thoughtfully. I run a hand through his hair, trying not to think about anything beyond or before this moment.
What do other people think of you?
Samson asks. That's an odd question. Samson looks at me expectantly, like he doesn't care that it's an odd question. I laugh, looking out at the water while I think. I'm not meek, so sometimes my attitude can be misconstrued as being bitchy. But I was lumped in with my mother back home. When you're judged based on the person who raised you, you can't be neutral about who you are. You either let it consume you and you become who others think you are, or you fight it with everything in you.
I look down at him. What do you think people think of you?
I don't think people think of me at all.
I shake my head in disagreement. I do. And do you know what I think?
What do you think?
I think I want to get back in the ocean with you. Samson grins.
We're pretty far from the vinegar.
Then make it worth it in case I get stung again.
Samson hops to his feet and then pulls me up. I slip off my shorts as he removes his shirt. He holds my hand as we work our way through the waves and away from the shore. When the water is up to my chest, we stop walking and we face each other, lowering ourselves until the water is up to both of our necks. We close the gap between us until we're kissing. Every time we kiss, it's as if we leave more of ourselves inside the other. I wish I knew more about relationships and love and all the things I used to think I was too good for, or maybe not good enough for. I want to know how to make this feeling last. I want to know if a guy like Samson could ever fall in love with a girl like me. A wave crashes over us, forcing us apart. The water completely soaks my hair. I'm wiping it out of my eyes, laughing, when Samson makes his way back to me. He wraps my legs around his waist, but keeps his hands on my hips. There's a flicker of happiness in his eyes. It's the first time I've seen it. I've been here almost 2 weeks, and this is the first time he's looked completely at ease. It makes me feel good that he seems to find that with me, but I'm sad it's not something he feels all the time. What kind of things make you happy, Samson?
Rich people are never content, he says instantaneously. That's sad he didn't even have to think about it. So the saying is true, money doesn't buy happiness. When you're poor, you have things to reach for, goals that excite you. Maybe it's a dream house or a vacation or even a meal at a restaurant on a Friday night. But the more money you have, the harder it is to find things to be excited about. You already have your dream house. You can go anywhere in the world anytime you want to. You could hire a private chef to make you every food you ever crave. People who aren't rich think all those things are fulfilling, but they aren't. You can fill your life with nice things, but nice things don't fill the holes in your soul.
What fills the holes in a soul? Samson's eyes scroll over my face for a few seconds,
pieces of someone else's soul.
He lifts me slightly so that less of my skin is beneath the water. He drags his mouth across my jaw, and when his lips find mine, I'm hungry for them, starving. I feel him harden even though we're in the water, yet still all we do is kiss. This kiss lasts for several minutes. It's both not enough and more than enough.
Bea,
he whispers against my mouth.
I could stay here forever, but we should probably head back before it gets dark.
I nod, but then I kiss him again because I don't really care if it gets dark. Samson laughs, but he quickly shuts up and returns the kiss with even more urgency. I wish there were more parts of him I could reach. I can't stop running my hands over his chest and his shoulders and his back. They end up in his hair as his mouth makes its way down my chest. I feel his warm breath against my skin right between my breasts. He lifts a hand to the back of my neck and I feel him touch the knot on my bathing suit top. Then he looks me in the eye, silently asking for permission. I nod, and he slowly pulls at the string until it's untied. The straps to my bathing suit fall down, and Samson leans forward, kissing the top of my breast. He slowly begins to work his mouth down until he takes my nipple in his mouth. I suck in a shaky breath. The sensation of his tongue against my skin sends chills down my body. I close my eyes and press my cheek against the top of his head, never wanting him to stop. But he does, thanks to the sound of an engine in the distance. He immediately pulls away when we both hear it. There's a truck down the beach headed in this direction. Samson lifts the straps of my bikini and reties them around my neck. I groan and maybe even pout. We make our way back to the shore, even though the truck turned around and headed back in the other direction before it reached us. We're both quiet as we pack up our things into the golf cart. The sun is beginning to set on the other side of the peninsula.
casting a red and purple glow across the sky. The wind from the ocean has picked up, and I look over at Samson for a moment. He's facing the breeze, his eyes closed. There's a calmness about him right now, and that calmness spreads to me. His moods are contagious. I'm glad he seems to only have one or two. I've never felt as stable as I have since I started spending all my hours with him. Have you ever closed your eyes and just listened to the ocean? He asks. He opens his eyes and turns to face me. No. He faces the water again and closes his eyes. Try it. I close my eyes and blow out a breath. Samson's hand finds mine, and we just stand there together in silence, facing the water. I listen for what he's hearing. Seagulls, waves, peace, hope. I don't know how long we stand here because I become consumed by the meditation. I don't know that I've ever stood in one spot with my eyes closed and just let go of my thoughts. I let them go, all of them. Eventually, it's like the world grows completely silent. I'm pulled out of that silence when I feel Samson kiss the back of my head. I open my eyes and inhale a deep breath. And that's the end of that. Dinner, a makeout session, and a stress reliever. What a date.
Where's your dog?
He asks as we start to climb into the golf cart. I look around but don't see Pepperjack Cheese anywhere. I call for him but he doesn't come running. My heart picks up a little and that doesn't go unnoticed. Samson calls for him. I start to get worried because we're a long way from our houses and if we don't find him, he may not be able to make his way back.
Maybe he's behind the dunes, Samson suggests.
We both make our way over to the high rows of sand. Samson grabs my hands and helps me up the dune. When we reach the top and look on the other side of it, I'm immediately relieved to see PJ. Oh, thank God, I say, scaling down the other side of the dune.
What's he doing? Samson asks, walking behind me.
PJ is about 10 feet away, digging furiously in the ground. Maybe he found some crabs. When we reach him, I freeze. Whatever he found, it's not a crab. It looks like... Samson, I whisper. What is that? Samson drops to his knees and starts wiping dust off what looks like bones in the shape of a hand. I pull PJ away, but he fights to get out of my grip. Samson is now digging, moving sand away, revealing more and more of what is obviously a human arm. Oh my God, I whisper. I cover my mouth with my hand. PJ slips out of my grip and gets away from me. He rushes back to Samson's side, but Samson pushes him away.
Sit, he commands the dog.
PJ sits but whimpers. I lower myself to my knees next to Samson and watch as he continues to uncover more of the bones. Maybe you shouldn't touch it, I suggest. Samson says nothing. He just keeps digging until he reaches the shoulder joint of the skeleton. There's still a shirt attached to it. It's a red checkered shirt, faded and torn. Samson touches a piece of it and it falls apart in his hands. Do you think it's an entire body? Samson still doesn't answer me. He just falls back onto his haunches and stares at the ground. I'll go get my phone and call the police. I start to get up, but Samson grabs my wrist. I look at him, and his eyes are pleading.
Don't.
What? I shake my head. We have to report this.
Don't, Bea,
he says again. I've never seen his expression so unyielding.
This is the guy I was telling you about. Rake. I recognize his shirt.
He looks back down at what he's just uncovered.
The police will just throw him in an unmarked grave.
We still have to report this. It's a body, a missing person. He shakes his head again.
He wasn't a missing person. Like I told you, no one even noticed he was gone.
I can already tell by Samson's demeanor that I'm not changing his mind.
He would want to be in the ocean. It's the only place he belongs.
We're both quiet for a while as we think. For whatever reason, I don't feel like this is my decision, but I sure as hell don't want to be here a second longer. Samson stands up and disappears back over the dune. I have no intention of being left alone with human remains, so I follow after him. Samson walks toward the water, and when he's a few feet away from it, he just stops. He clasps his hands behind his head. I stop walking because it looks like he needs a minute to process this. He stares at the water for what seems like an eternity. I just pace behind him, torn between doing what I know is right or leaving this decision completely up to Samson. He's the one who knew the guy, I didn't. After a while, I finally break the silence. Samson. He doesn't face me. His voice is resolute when he says, "I need you to take the golf cart back to the house."
"Without you?"
He nods, still facing the other direction. "I'll meet up with you later tonight." "I'm not leaving you out here. It's too far to walk in the dark." He turns now, and when he does, he looks like a completely different person than he did 10 minutes ago. His features are hardened, and there's something newly broken inside of him. He walks toward me and takes my face in his hands. His eyes are red, like he's on the verge of breaking down.
"Please," he says, "go. I need to do this alone."
There's an ache in his voice, a pain I'm unfamiliar with. An agony I expected to feel after finding my mother dead, but instead I was left empty and numb. I have no idea why he needs this, but I can see his need for me to leave.